Yo, what's up? It's Rob Cavastani from Death Angel here, and you are listening to the Mac Nez Podcast.
I wanted to do this project because I feel it's important as a horror director to know what scares people, but also I would like people to know how Native American people see horror movies and what scares us.
I'd have to say Pet Sematary.
The first commercial horror film I ever saw was The Exorcist. When I got out of there, I felt like I was like in another world. I didn't feel connected to my reality.
It scared me so much that I literally thought I was going to die. When she's in the closet and he's reaching in for her, I thought this meant I was going to die.
I think my favorite horror movie is The Shining.
Oh, Native people love horror movies, right? But you would never know that because, well, nobody ever asks us what we think about anything anyway.
I think that one really, really shook me a little bit because of the fact that I could see it actually happening. Like, it didn't seem super far-fetched.
Saw, because it's psychological.
I think Native American stories and spiritual beliefs are more scarier because it has happened.
That stuff is like way, way more scary than any of the stuff that I see in the theaters.
That's why this project is important, because it's going to shed light and show other people what Native American people think about something, especially scary movies.
Yo, yo, what's up, everybody? Mac Nez Podcast, episode 114. Before we get into this, I want to give a shout out to Carlos Pintor, or however he said it. You guys heard him on the last episode. Right on, brother. Thank you so much for coming on the show and talking about his paranormal investigating stuff. If you guys listen to the episode, he asked me if I'd like to come along, and I don't know, man. I'd be too scared, and I'm one of those natives. Like, I don't go looking for it because I don't want to open any doors to that dimension or whatever. But hey, Carlos, brother, you do your thing. But that's me, and I don't know if I could. Other than I would be mainly just because I'm too scared. That's another show. He'll definitely be back on again, and we'll talk about some more stuff that he's doing. But the reason why we are here is he's basically the second host to this. He's been on who knows how many times, but we got a writer and director and actor, recording artist, Mike J. Marin. You guys know him from The Smudging and everything else he has done. Mike is a busy man, man. He's out there doing it, and he's got a new one for you guys. I was lucky enough to get to see it before all of you. So he's got a new documentary called Cinema. Or no, I'm sorry. Cinema Red, Native and Horror, man. Yeah, we'll get to that in a second, dude. But other than welcome to the show, dude, how many things is this now?
Projects I've done?
Yeah.
Four. I've done The Smudging was my first feature, and then the two short films, Demon and The Parties Downstairs, and then this is my first documentary, Cinema Red, Natives and Horror.
Speaking of The Smudging, man, it's all streaming on Amazon, so I had a lot of listeners check it out already. And, dude, I see your updates every now and then on Instagram and Facebook, dude. That as many people that have watched it, So the Amazon, would they send you something to, hey, this is how many times it's been viewed?
Yeah, well, I check I check every week to see how many viewing hours I got, and with the number of viewing hours, and I did the math, it's like it's that number. It's like up to 500K. So that's in three countries right now. Japan hasn't tallied their numbers yet, but that was just out of the U.S., the U.K., and Germany.
Damn, dude. I mean, that's crazy. Other than all of us that have seen it here in America, but to be international and everyone else seeing it over there, man, that's awesome.
It was cool, but there was one day that I was laughing because it's like one day last month it got one view.
Man, it's all right, man. It's better than no views.
I know. I was just laughing about this. Like you see one day it's like 500 views. Like 300 views and then boom, one view.
It's all right.
I was like, well, that's cool, man. Somebody watched it.
Yeah, someone did. Well, I contributed to those 500 or five that way. What? How many?
500.
500,000.
Half a million.
Yeah, man. Well, I'm part of that. I will actually on my TV and my phone. So, I'm two of those viewings. I hyped it up to many people. The guy I was just talking about, Carlos. When we were talking about that, I had mentioned you and the film you made because I told him, I said, well, when my brother Mike made this film, he caught something on camera and he was like, what? And then I had to find the video and I sent it to him and I said, this is from his film, The Smudging. He goes, is it on Amazon? I said, yeah. He goes, okay, I've seen that, but I didn't know what it was. So I'm sure he's watched it by now, but.
Nice.
Yeah, right. Man, I showed him that clip, dude, and he was like, whoa. I said during the film, I said, whoever was holding the camera and you see Mike and I can't remember her name,
Sam,
running around, I said, that was it that was in that room, right?
Yeah, it was up on the third floor.
Yeah, I said, everybody that's in that scene was the only ones in that room. I said, I don't know who or what that was. And I watched it again, dude, and just watching the video alone creeps me out. And then much less knowing, waiting for that scene to come while I'm watching the film and just getting creeped. I think what creeped me out, not that so much that it was just standing there, is when it moved. And I was oh, no. Nah.
I mean, Jesus, when I was doing the, when I was in the studio and I was editing it, you know, and I always edit with all the lights off. And then I, like I said before, man, I couldn't turn the lights on fast enough after I saw that. And it was just, God, it's chilling because like, it's funny how you see something like that. And then you hear skeptics say like, well, ghosts don't exist. There's no such thing. But when you see it, and especially when you capture it, it's like, you know, and then you show people. And then of course there's people that are like, oh, you guys, that's just the hype of the film. And okay, well, you believe what you want, but I was there. It was being filmed, and that's the best I could do. You know what I'm saying? It's creepy. It's people that have seen it when I do screenings and I point that out to them later. And then I show them that the supplemental video I did. A lot of people get freaked out at that. They're just like, you know, just something that they've never. And of course, somebody always brings up Three Men and a Baby, but it's like, that's been debunked. You know, that little shadow, that little boy, that's already been debunked. But this one, as far as I know, it's the only one that's captured something like that.
Yeah, see, dude, just imaging it right now, picturing it in my head, it creeps me out. But we've talked that into the ground, everyone, if you guys have listened into the show. But, hey, it's playing. So if you haven't seen it and you're tired of us talking about it, go watch the film. A few times and tell your friends. I'll definitely put that video of what Mike captured on the Facebook page, East Society and MacNez and everything, so you guys can see it there. But Cinema Red, Native and Horror. I got to watch it today. It's only, what, 50 minutes long? Is that what you said?
Yeah.
And Mike had texted me, well, what'd you think of it? There was only one thing, but it was kind of a little mistake. But that was nothing really. But, dude, man, I really liked what was going on in this. The only people I knew in it was Jerry. And Courage. Was that his name?
Yeah.
Because he's in Demon, and you mentioned him before. But everyone, oh, and Jim, friend of the show, Jim Terry. I know him, and I really liked what he said, especially at the very end. It was cool to close it out with that, then with the credits and all that rolling when it got funny. And I thought it was I thought it was good to end it that way, because other than being kind of creeped out with what was going on with the interviews with all these people, we'll get to them individually in a second. But what you did with that ending, it was like, okay, you kind of, because I was like, I want to watch stuff like this. Yes, it's a documentary, but your mind starts to wander on scary things and some of the images that you showed throughout the documentary, clips from other films. I was like, I'm sitting there watching it in a loud room, but I have my headphones on. And I was like, man, I mean, I was just getting creeped out. I mean, I always go back to a scary documentary is like Terror in the Isles.
Yeah.
When we saw that in the theater and like, being, yeah, it was funny, but it was scary because they're showing all these clips from all these horror films that we grew up with. And then I'm like, that movie, that documentary still spooks me out a little. I mean, then and so as well as this one, man. I mean, the imagery that you show in it and some of the topics that your interviewees are in it, what they talk about, dealing with all with Native stuff. I mean, that was kind of eerie. So I liked how you ended it, like on a little comedy note to like, oh, okay. Because I'm usually when I watch scary things, I'm like, I got to watch something funny now to, to get me out of it. But yeah, man, I thought it was awesome. I mean, it was cool to see all these people, especially Jerry and Jim and these other ladies and gentlemen I didn't know. I really liked the guy. I think he was in Chicago and he was talking a lot about the J-horror stuff. I really liked him, but we'll start off with your guests, your female guests, the ones you interviewed. Who were all they?
Okay, the first one was a young lady named Jennifer Verenchik. She's from out here in L.A., Tawn Autumn Tribe, and she's a director. She does short films, and she recently did one called Crossers that was really a good film. It's only about, I think, about 10 minutes long, but it's really a scary, her imagery is really scary. Good storytelling. I just the general plot of it is how it's a concept that she came up with when Native people die and then there's souls waiting on the other side, wait for them to leave that body. And then so they can jump in your body after you're dead. It's kind of, it's creepy, you know. I'll just leave it at that. I won't ruin it, but it's called Crossers, and she's done other films that got selected by LA Skins Fest, which is one of the biggest native film festivals out here on the West Coast in Los Angeles. And she did a film about with a statement about protesting the pipeline, and that was a pretty good narrative film. But yeah, she's from out here, and I met her when I moved out here 3 years ago, and we hooked up and just started talking about film. And I knew from talking to her that I immediately wanted her on this project because she's very insightful about film, and she's not really a big horror fan, as she states in the doc. But she did find some very resourceful material to pull from that she experienced. Like just real quick, without ruining anything, you know, she talks about her first experience of watching a horror movie was Halloween 2 and how it freaked her out. You know, that there's some scenes in there that freaked her out. And, but yeah, she was one of the guests, and we'll just go in order. And then the second guest was that I interviewed. His name was Courage, and he's in my short film Demon, which is basically a monologue. He's the whole show in that 6 minute documentary. But, I met him when I came to LA, when I screened the Smudging out here at the Indian Center here in Los Angeles. And we met, we clicked. He's done voice work on Nickelodeon. He's done some things with cartoons like Rugrats and some of the newer stuff. And then he's also very adept in parkour, which is that art of like jumping off buildings and tumbling. And he's really athletic. does his own fight scenes when he does short films. And so, yeah, Courage is a very, very talented young man. And then there was a young lady named Amber Redbear, who has a talk show in Texas called Diversity Outspoken, which reflects on different issues throughout Native community, throughout other communities, and guests just come on and talk about a plethora of things like low-income housing, police brutality, things like that, keep people all woke and aware. And she, you know, she's another one that said that she wasn't too much into horror films, but she was very good to meet and talk with and become friends with. She's also a filmmaker. She's also a filmmaker out in Texas. She's a Army veteran, so props to that. And she's really nice, energetic person. I love her energy. And then we moved. I went out to Chicago on a quick trip and met up with Jim Terry, who's a comic book artist. One of his titles is The Crow, Skinning of the Wolves. He's worked on several other projects. He's working on one now called Sundowners. So please keep an eye out for Jim Terry. He's a Ho-Chunk guy, born and raised in Chicago. And his knowledge of horror films and insights like are like me and you, Nez. He's just like the three of us together. That conversation would never end because he's a really funny guy. I mean, the way like I loved interviewing him because his ending statements always ended perfectly. He's like always knew what to say at that last bit. And I knew when I interviewed him, because you mentioned earlier that you like how he closed out. As soon as that I saw that footage and I was interviewing him, I knew right then and there, I was like, that's going to be the closing statement. That right there.
Speaking of editing, I mean, for each interview, how long was each one?
They were about 30 to 35 minutes.
And then, I mean, I wouldn't even know where to begin. I mean, doing interviews is easy. But yeah. Editing, like especially for something like that, for a documentary or a film, dude, it's like how many times do you have to watch those scenes to get what you want? I mean, especially with an interview, like, okay, this is where I want this part, this is where I want that part. I wouldn't know what to do, dude. I mean, I would probably just hire you and say, look, here, this is what I filmed. Help me put it together. it'd be mainly you putting it together, but yeah, here's what I got.
It's my first documentary. So I just kind of, I've watched several films throughout my life and several documentaries. And luckily, they have a ton of them on Netflix and on Hulu and Amazon. So I just watched a lot of informative TV and see the structure. You kind of start to see the structure and how to do it. So I just formulated it into 9 questions. And with each one is a block of conversation. So you just kind of cut the conversations up that way. And then you go through each one. You pick out the most poignant things that the individual is saying. And that's how you put it together. It's really hard. I will say one of the most difficult things when you're speaking with people and then you're editing their conversation, one of the hardest things is when they're long-winded, when they can talk forever and not have breaks. And then you have to kind of just really fine-tooth comb it, know when to cut it, know when to splice it, and know when to piece it all together. That right there is, I'm glad that I'm still learning, but I think at my first attempt, I think I did pretty well. Just watching this footage, listening to what they're saying. And like I was saying, like listening to them while you're interviewing them, you kind of get an idea already where you're going to make the cuts, where you're going to splice and where you're going to put everything together. You kind of get a roadmap while you're talking and seeing exactly how you want to put it together. That's how I did it. Cause I'm an artist anyway, I'm a visual learner. So I'm always thinking like that. I rarely think in straight lines. But when I was listening to this, I saw the pattern, how I wanted to do it. And in my head, I created a template, how I wanted to structure it. And then putting it all together that's the fun part. The fun part is putting it all together. Some of the scenes I watch through, I've watched this number of times before I made the final edits. And it's like, watching it and listening to it, you start to see where you can shorten it. It's kind of like it's trial and error. You know, you watch a cut and then you say, okay, I can cut that. You make notes. You go back editing it. The longest part is when it's rendering. When you render it, it takes about an hour to render it. And then you got to compress it. So you got to put it in another engine. And then that takes another hour. And then you just keep going from there and from there. So it's fun putting it all together. It's like this one huge puzzle that's a lot of fun. And finding the right pieces, it's cool. But okay, so there was Jim, and then there's Alan Turner. Alan loves Japanese horror. He is a game designer. He worked in computer animation, game developing for Sony and for different game companies. And then he developed a role-playing game like Dungeons and Dragons based on native mythology called Eridor. I think that is how you pronounce it, Eridor. But if you Google his name, Alan Turner, game designer, that it'll come up all about him. I met him in Chicago years ago he was one of the first people I met when I moved out there. And he's really a neat guy, really down to earth, really into culture, speaks Lakota, and just, you know, how people see him as like this really tall black dude. But it's like he knows all three of his bloodlines, which is he's Irish, Lakota, and something else. But those are the main two. But Alan's really, really a neat guy. I mean, he's really, really a neat guy, really fun to talk to. And I had the honor of working with his two daughters in my youth program at the Indian Center, and they were really, really neat kids. Then we came back, and I met with Geraldine Keams, who is very close and dear to our heart. She's one of the dopest native celebrities you'll ever meet. Really, really just blessed to meet her. She's a Navajo lady. She was in the movie The Car, which Nez and I love that movie. She was in The Car. She played Donna, she watched over the office for the sheriff's department. And then she was in The Outlaw Josie Wales, the Clint Eastwood Western. She was played the role of, I think it was Little Dove. Little Dove. She was a little Navajo girl that Chief Dan George ended up snagging.
Yep.
But yeah, she was it was fun meeting her, going out to her house, and she made me feel really welcome and good conversation. She has a really dope picture of her that somebody painted from The Outlaw Josie Wales of her character. And she was just really nice. I mean, just talking with her is like talking to a relative. You know, it was just a good conversation. And just real quick, got a little backstory about Clint, about how it was working with Clint Eastwood, and how it was working with James Brolin and Ronnie Cox on The Car. And she was just saying how they were just really cool people to work with. How, you know, she said that she said Clint doesn't like to be joked around with. Like, he doesn't like to be teased. So, but she said that they had a really good working relationship. He still checks in on her once in a while. So that's pretty dope. And then we get to, one of the coolest, funniest women I've ever met. Her name's Jackie Kilia. She's from the Bay Area. And she's a comedian, and she's really just funny. You'll see in the film her outlooks on things and her joking. She's always just a big old smile on her face. Really a great person. She started a comedy group called Amazons, and they perform it, all female comedy group, perform in San Francisco. So just Google Amazons and you'll see Jackie up there with a bunch of other talented ladies. And last but not least is one of the best homeboys I've ever met when I was in Chicago. We did a commercial that his name's Glenn Stanton. We did a commercial together where we played these two native guys watching pilgrims trying to catch a turkey. It's for this group called the Bison Council. If you YouTube it, Bison Council Thanksgiving, you'll see Glenn and myself as these two Indian guys sitting there watching these white dudes make fools of themselves. So that was my first big acting role. my first paid acting role, and I played a native. So yeah, even got to put extensions in my hair. So, but that was an experience sitting there in a herd of with an actual herd of buffalo around us, and just sitting really still so we don't spook them. But Glenn can be seen on AMC's The Sun, the show with Pierce Brosnan. I believe he plays a character named Fat Dog. And Glenn, as you'll see, he's not really that dude's built like a truck. Played football for Ohio State, but. Yeah, Glenn Stanton, he's really a neat guy, really funny, great person to talk to. But yeah, those are the eight. That was eight, right? Yeah, those are the eight individuals that that answered the call when I put the call out that I wanted to interview some talent for this project. And they're the ones that, you know, I was very thankful that gave their time and their opinions to the project. So yeah, man, it was a good experience working with all eight of them.
Well, that was cool, man. I mean, especially Jerry, man. She's been on she's a friend of the show. She's been on here. Go back to episode 101. I have a quick little interview with her, and we talk about the car. And she also gave me a little bit. It was right at the very end of the interview. I said, I can't let you go without asking you, how cool is Clint Eastwood? And she said, he was awesome. So that's about as much as I got out of her for that, but. Yeah, go back and listen to that episode, episode 101, and she talks about stuff she did dealing with the car. But yeah, man, everyone in there, I mean, especially the people that I didn't know and didn't even know who they were, I thought it was all good, man. I mean, I really loved you don't hear the questions you ask. I mean, maybe every now and then you do, but I liked how you did that, how you spliced yourself in with the question instead of asking them right there, hearing your voice and not seeing you. I really liked the little interludes that you did before each one when they were dealing with the topic and the subject of what was going on in the whole documentary, man. I thought that was really cool.
Those segues. Oh my God, dude, I hate filming myself. For one, I live in this little apartment, and there's a family above me with three kids. And just that night I happened to shoot. I don't know why they didn't put their kids to bed, but they were all running around screaming, having a good time. And I was like, fuck, I'm trying to get this over with. Plus I had to turn all the fans off and it gets hella hot in my crib. So I'm sitting there sweating, trying to get through these, plus memorizing all that dialogue. You know, all those things that I'm saying to introduce the next segment, that was a task in itself. But yeah, I'm glad it came out good. I'm glad that they came out really articulate, because I didn't want to like and over the whole thing. So yeah, man, those segues were pretty tough thing to shoot.
Yeah, man. Well, I didn't hear anything. I mean, I didn't even notice there was background music and. I was just so concentrated on what these ladies and these young guys were saying. And then I don't know what happened. I think it might've got quiet for a second. And that's when I realized, I was like, shit, there's some music in the background. So, I didn't even hear that. I had my earbuds in, but like I said, I was so sucked in, to what they were talking about. But overall, man, I thought it was an amazing film work you did. Lighting and all that was cool. I noticed that you filmed some of your mom's house, some of your house, because you could see your awesome collectibles in the background. the one gentleman that was talking about the J horror stuff. Where was that shot at?
We shot that at the American Indian Center, the new location on Ainslie Street in Chicago. In one of the side rooms by the lobby, they have a art gallery. So it's not too big. It's a pretty good size space for a few pieces to be up, but we got to shoot in there, and it was that night was almost oh my God, that night I had to interview one more person who I was going to interview Vince Romero, who plays Robert Locke in The Smudging.
Yeah,
but through miscommunication, he thought I meant we were going to shoot downtown. I don't know where he got that, but unfortunately I didn't get to shoot them, but I did get Alan and Jim that night in the gallery. So that was a, that was a real treat that worked out well. So Vince, if you're listening, man, I'm sorry. Sorry. I didn't get to get to you. I'll get you on the next project.
What was the gentleman's name again? I'm sorry.
Alan Turner.
Right. Alan. I've noticed he was the only one that you filmed from the side. What was, why did you choose? Other than I assume you were just trying to show the art on the walls, but for a camera shot, I mean, I thought that was awesome because was it just you two there, or was someone else helping you with the camera work?
No, it was just me. I just set it up on a profile shot, and I sat in front of him so he would look at me and not at the camera.
Why did you choose him just to do that?
Because I like Alan's profile. He's a really good, to me, his face and his beard always reminded me of those like Greek statues of warriors, like those ones that are all chiseled. And he just has a really cool profile. And I just thought that would be a cool shot. I was trying to get a little bit creative, but then I wanted to capture him kind of a low angle looking up because I respect Alan a lot. I mean, he's really he's a mentor type of person in my life. You know, he's really good calming way about him, and his outlook is very positive on things that, you know, there's a lot of, you know, all of us have been around a lot of negative stuff, but Alan always seems to find that light and all that dark. And I just wanted to capture him in that kind of, you know, that of looking up at someone that, you know, I kind of walk next to your dad when you're little and look up at him. That's the light I wanted to capture him in.
Well, I thought that was really cool, man. I really liked every time he came on, and it was something totally different because you got used to everyone else just kind of like not staring at the camera, but looking towards the camera. But when you interviewed him, I thought that was awesome. But yeah, man, I always got to sit there and pick apart this and that, but dude, there was nothing in this that needs to be taken out. I thought everything they said was amazing. I thought, like I said, with the film work and the lighting, all that was fine. The sound, you could clearly hear them. And yeah, man, it was an awesome documentary, dude. I'm glad I got to see it. Cause it was what took 4 months to make.
Yeah. I started to think about it in March. And one thing that I can't go without saying, or else I'd be cheating everybody out. But one thing that I really loved that I've seen in the past year, one of the best films I've seen in the past year that's important. It's an important film. If you haven't seen it, on Shudder, called Horror Noir, about African Americans and horror. That film is very important to see if you haven't seen it, because just like us, other minority groups like us, no one ever asks us what we think about things, about what Native people think about anything. It's just assumed we'll like it. It's just assumed that since it's about us, they get a pass. But as we talk about in the documentary, we kind of dismantle that theory of everything, just as long as it's Native, it's cool. No, because no one ever asks us what we think about it. No one ever calls us and says, hey, we're doing a horror movie about Native stuff. Can you be a consultant? No one ever asks us. They just assume. I won't get too much into that because that's all in the film. Spoken very, very articulately by talented people. But Horror Noir is what inspired me to want to do this, because it gives a light to something that a lot of people don't know about. You know, how do you know Native people? How do you know that we don't do or don't like horror? You ever asked us? How do you know, like you with skateboarding? How do you know, like Native people? Oh, Native people like skateboarding? Really? Yeah. Well, did you ever ask? You know, it's just, I wanted to shed light on media seen through our eyes. And the most fun form of media to me is horror movies, scary movies, supernatural, whatever. As long as you can get someone to talk about it, you know, that's a number one conversation starter. Better than politics. Better than talking anything else. You mentioned horror movies. Five people out of six have a favorite. they will tell you theirs, and it'll spark a huge conversation. So I wanted to open that up. I wanted to say that, you know, like I say in the trailer, you know, I wanted to do a project that opened a lot of people's eyes to something about Native people that they don't know about. So that's why I wanted to give our people a platform to talk. I wanted them to talk. That's why there's some, you know, when I was talking about this project with friends and family, they're saying, well, what about you? You know, some of the interviewees were like, well, let us turn the camera on you and let's talk to you. I was like, I don't want to be in this. You know, it's not me. Everybody knows. Everybody hears what I think all the time, you know, but I wanted them to have a platform. Sure, I introduce the segments, but I wanted to be more of the Bob Wilkins, play the role of the Bob Wilkins, Rod Serling, you know, introduce it and not be involved in it in that capacity. You know, I did an interview when I did the smudging that is on YouTube. If you look up Mike Jimmerin interview, you'll hear my take on things. But I wanted to do a project that focused on Native talent in different mediums and talk about horror movies. And I think I did a pretty damn good job at it.
I'm not biased, everyone, just because I've known Mike forever and everything. I mean, he has heard me tell him, well, I didn't like this and I didn't like that with other things. But with this, man, I liked everything about it, everybody that was in it. And like I said, with how it looked, how it sounded and everything, I thought it was an amazing documentary that you did. Right on, brother. I mean, horns up to you. But when they're answering the questions of what you say, we won't tell them what they are. But I was sitting there, I mean, listening to them, and then I was starting to think and answer these questions right along with them. I mean, as far as hearing my opinion about how do we feel about how Natives are being represented in the few horror movies that are out there. I mean, there's more than a few. There's a lot. I mean, you got, what was that one with the bats? Nightwing or whatever? With the bat piss and all that.
Nightwing.
you show some images and stuff. You show that stupid one, The Darkness, with the bacon. Kevin, that movie was horrible, everyone. Don't even waste your time. They needed to ask somebody because they took it their own way and just ruined it and made us look stupid. There has been some, I mean, there's a lot of stuff. I mean, let's take Prophecy, for example, the one that came out in the '70s, I don't know if it was 78, 79, somewhere back then. That one, yes, there was a few Natives in it. And, but I don't like when they get non-Natives to play Natives. Yes, I understand that you want to get butts in the seats. You got to put, Lou Diamond Phillips and all that. No, this ain't a shot at Lou Diamond. I love Lou Diamond, but I'm just saying they got to get people in the seats. So that we got to give them somebody that we know. But the representation of Native Americans in horror have so far just not been the greatest. You also showed like a poster of Creepshow 2. I love Chief Woodenhead. That's like one of my favorite stories within the Creepshow 2 anthology, but yeah, it was pretty stereotypical with some of the stuff that was being said in it and portrayed in it, but I still love that story. But yeah, man, I mean, I don't know who they asked. Yes, they did in Poltergeist 2 with the late and great Will Sampson. They did ask him, and he did give them his two cents on what they should do, and he did tell them like you mentioned in the documentary with something, there's some things you can't talk about and you can't film or show in film. And it was good that he was there, that they did. I saw this all in the documentary, and he did tell him, he's like, yeah, we can't do this. This is, like Jim Terry said in this, there's other ways around it that we can do it, but not straightforward on saying that, this is what happens when this happens. I mean, yeah, we can't talk about that stuff. So I'm kind of just picking my words on how to describe it to you non-native listeners that are listening to this. All you natives, you guys know the deal. But some of the stuff, I mean, is being portrayed in horror films. It's all stereotypical crap. But there has been a handful that I do enjoy. I mean, just other than Chief Woodenhead, I can't think of any other ones off topic. I know the remake of Amityville Horror, they mentioned some native stuff that was going on there, and especially dealing with Pet Sematary. Well, the actual Pet Sematary is on the Mi'kmaq Indians burial ground. And also dealing with natives was Poltergeist 2. And The Shining, they built the Stanley Kubrick Shining, not the one that came on ABC. I mean, they built that on top of a native burial ground. That's why all hell breaks loose when these things going on. They do try to make us this is evil because of the Native Americans. It's not evil because of us. It's evil because you idiots are building things where it shouldn't be built on top of our sacred stuff, man. That's why bad things are happening to you. So listen to the natives when they tell you, oh, you guys can't build this here, this is going to happen. They try to warn them, they don't listen, and look what happens.
Yeah, see, like right now, I mean, the United States, if you think about it, the United States is like just North America, 48-50 states. You know what I'm saying? It's all one big burial ground, because there's in every state, man, there was shit. Look at the southern states, is rife with our indigenous people being murdered, plus, you know, countless slaves being murdered. And it's funny. So, you know, America, you're paying the price now with this jackass president you got. Should have been nicer to us. There wouldn't have been no Trump. So you're pretty much getting back everything you. Everything you did to us, you're getting it back now. So, yep, go and roll, because now you know what it feels like to be native. You're getting fucked on a daily basis. So welcome to Native America, baby.
Yep. I mean, it's nothing new to us. So all you guys, people acting like, oh, this is new, and this is not new.
Nope.
You're like Mike said, man, you're finally feeling what we've gone through. So, but like I said, overall, man, this was an amazing documentary. And yes, I'm not saying this because I know Mike. I mean, it was good. If this was something that, oh, Cinema Red, I'm going to click on this and watch this, man. I mean, it was cool. I liked everything, the topics that were being talked about. I liked all the answers that the interviewers gave. And I'm going back to Jim Terry, man. I mean, he's been on my show. I've interviewed him a few times. He's been on MacNez. He's been on East Society. And yeah, man, I like what you said. He's got a lot to say, and he always ends it good. I mean, I can think of the interviews that I did with him. He always ended it good, and I knew where to end it with him.
Yeah.
So it was cool. And I really liked what he said in this. Like, when he was introduced to horror, it was like he had gone to these old theaters where they showed kung fu movies and action stuff like that. And that just made me think of shit, man. Parkway was like that, or the Lux and the Scene 7, stuff like that. I mean, those are the theaters that we went to. And it's sad that none of them are here or are around anymore. But I mean, that's how we I think Mike and I grew up in the best time. This is my opinion, everyone. The best time for horror.
Yep.
Because in our era, everything that was made, horror, action, whatever, was in the theater. And I know a lot of new horror fans are now watching these films that they never heard of for the first time. And, like, it's weird talking to someone like, oh, I just seen Evil Speak, the awesome classic with the great and legendary Clint Howard. And they're like, oh, yeah, I saw this movie and it was awesome. And da-da-da. I'm like, damn, I saw that when it was brand new, other than it makes me feel like an old fart. But I'm like, wow. I mean, it's cool. Like with my guys, with Tiga, Marky, Kyle, and Eric, man, I've been showing them all the stuff that you and I went and saw in the theater. Oh, me and every story is, oh, me and Uncle Mike saw this, or me and Uncle Jamie went and seen this. The majority of my stories seeing horror movies, Your name is always in there.
Oh, dude, I just real quick, I pulled one out the vault last night because for some, I had this urge to watch it while I was sitting at Subway. And I was like, I'm going to go home and watch this. Demons.
Yeah.
Came home and threw Demons on and just enjoyed every second of it. I rarely do I watch movies without going on my phone. I stayed off my phone that whole time and just remembered us going to Parkway and seeing that and just laughing and just having a good ass time. And I will say, if you haven't seen Demons, check it out. I mean, a scary movie based in a movie theater. And we were so lucky to see it in a movie theater. And all this stuff going on, it was just, we had such a good time. Our little crew went and saw it, and it was a good, I love, Italian horror is the shit. I love all kind of horror movies, but Italian horror is a special place in my heart because of movies like Demons and Zombie and The Beyond, Lucio Fulci, Lamberto Bava, Mario Bava, you know, just to name a few of those directors just set their mark and enforced it in horror. And I just, I dug it, man. I dig that kind. And one of the new genres of horror that I'm getting into is Ozploitation, which is from Australia. So you get films like Ozploitation film. One of the most known ones is Mad Max. That's pure Oz film. And there's a new one on Shudder. If you haven't seen it, it's a fun film called Boar, about this giant boar that's loose in the outback killing people, and it's like a Australian version of Jaws, but it's enjoyable. The special effects are pretty cute, pretty, I won't say cheesy, but they're good, they're fun to watch. But yeah, man, going back, it's like I would love to make enough money as a filmmaker to where a little side gig I have is opening up, finding an old movie theater, fixing it up, and having just like grindhouse, old grindhouse films, get as many as I can get my hands on and just show them there, like Friday nights, just Friday from like 7 to midnight or 7 to what, let's just show these old films, get people back into going to see good horror. Because yeah, man, we lived in a time where horror movies were just, they were key. I mean, they were just the shit. I mean, that's, we come from the era of the Halloween and Friday the 13th, all the top heavies, you know, we saw that stuff, and now they're remaking it, and some of it they're screwing up, but it feels good to know that we saw it when it was new, when it was brand new, and our reaction to it is just like, it's always going to be like that. You know what? I saw there's a dude on Facebook named Ghetto Geppetto, and he said something today when I was scrolling through, and somebody said to him, he was talking about old horror movies and old TV shows from his past. And someone commented something like, damn, well, it's too bad those days are over. And he said, I have Blu-rays. It's never going to be over for me. I'm like, yes, that right there. Ghetto Geppetto, Roy Miles, props, man. That right there just solidified how I feel. I mean, I'm sure how you feel about old stuff. I mean, it was the best. Those were the best times. TV shows were dope. Movies were dope. Music was dope. I mean, it was just a good time to be alive. The 80s, man, we lived it. We lived it, and there'll never be another time like it. Never.
Oh, no. Because of everything goes online, or everything goes... yes, they're trying to get away from the physical hard media, but I mean, everyone that made a film, like I said earlier, everything that was made was in the theater. I mean, now it's, I mean, especially you being a filmmaker now, I mean, yes, we did see it in the theater a few times, which was amazing each time we'd seen it, but I mean, it's like, it's not the same. Yes, horror is always going to be there, but it, to me, it comes in waves on what's going to be new, and it's hard to come up with what's going to hit. What's going to be? Who's going to be the next Michael Myers? Who's going to be the next Jason? I mean, Victor Crowley is one with the Hatchet films. To me, I think was one of the last great ones. Yes, they're a little hacky films, but I love them. Those are the type of films that I like. I mean, but growing up in the 80s, I mean, we had it all. I mean, none of you guys now, any of you young listeners, wouldn't have all this stuff now. I mean, because of the 80s. The 80s opened the door to horror. Yes, back in the days before us, when everything was black and white, going back with the Universal Monsters or the Godzillas and stuff like that before they became color. Yes, those were there as well, too. But, I mean, the 80s is what brought... The late 70s and 80s is what brought slashers to what they were. I mean, we didn't know these characters were going to be iconic characters now.
Yeah.
None of us. We didn't know that. I mean, I didn't know. I mean, I loved Michael Myers. I was introduced to him before Jason Voorhees, and didn't know that Jason was going to be like my all-time favorite slasher. I mean, I try to get my hands on everything Jason. That I can. Right now in front of me, I see 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 things dealing, 7 things dealing with Jason. That's how much I love him. That's just in front of me. I mean, you go around the rest of my house, you'll find more, but that's how much I love Jason. That's how much I love horror. I got 5 xenomorphs in front of me. And the other things that I love, Mike, as well, we got Star Wars. I got Star Wars figures in front of me. But I mean, it's and all this is set late 70s, 80s stuff.
Speaking of Star Wars real quick, dude, I got one of those Comic-Con Boba Fetts.
I wanted that, man, but if I would have bought it from Hasbro, it is cheaper. But everyone I had seen it, man, they wanted like triple the price for it. And I'm like, nah, I'm good. But
yeah, I paid a bill for it, but it's worth it. I mean, because it was the only one, like the day before the whole time during Comic-Con, eBay had tons of them. Everyone was selling them, 300, 400. There was only one left, and this brother got it and was like, I'll sell it exclusive, because he had one and he put it up, but he didn't flag me, so it didn't go straight to me. Someone snatched it up. So then he goes, give me 24 hours. I know a guy I can get another one. Boom. Today he hit me up. He's like, bro, I flagged you on it. It's only going to you. You could buy it right now. Swooped it up. So I was happy with that, because that the paint on that figure is classic.
Don't open it, man.
No, I'm not. I'm not going to open that.
I know you're out of the package guy, but dude, no, the package for that figure
is
awesome. I held it because this one guy had one. So what, can I see it? And I looked at it, I think he wanted like 100 and something for it. I don't even know how much it was. I think it was like $30 or something like that. But
$27.
Yeah. And I'm like, no. But that's me. But geez, if I had money falling out of my butt, oh, here you go. I would have bought a lot of stuff if I had money falling out my ass. But yeah, man, I mean, just everything that we grew up with, Mike and I. I mean, going back to Demons, if you guys have not seen that film, and your subscribers to Shudder, it's on there. Or everyone has YouTube. There's a clear copy of it on there. Hey, Demons 1 and 2. And you also mentioned Lucio Fulci's Zombie. That's on YouTube as well. For free. I mean, there's no way around it. And if you guys haven't seen those films, those three films that I just mentioned, Demons 2, I like it for what it is. But Demons and Zombie, those are two Italian classics to me, masterpieces in that. And like Mike said, we saw Demons in the theater, and yes, you can watch it in the safety of your home or on your phone or what have you, but when we saw it in the theater, when it was brand new, for those of you that have seen it, like the whole movie takes place in a movie theater, and watching it in our neighborhood theater that we grew up in, I mean, it was awesome to see that. And I think what made it scary to me was them being trapped in that theater. They would have got us in the Parkway, because Parkway is not that big. the Demons would have got us. That would have been nothing about it. The movie would have been over in like 5 minutes. But, I mean, that's what made Demons awesome, is because it took place in a movie theater. There's been other films after that took place in movie theaters, but Demons was something. Luckily, it was a big theater, because, like I said, the movie would have been over in 5 minutes. But I mean, yeah, we saw all kinds of stuff in the theater, and a lot of you new horror fans are seeing them now with streaming services or with DVD or Blu-ray, whatever you have. And there is an audience out there for old VHSs. I mean, I have friends that only watch VHS. I'll watch it if I have to, but I'm spoiled now. I want it HD. I want it 4K. I want it. Yes, these old movies that we'd seen back in the 40s, the 60s, and 70s, they look all gritty and they look cool on VHS, but if you're going to give me a Blu-ray of that and it's pure HD, I'm going to watch that. But
dude, like those Universal horror movies that they released, oh my God, they look so beautiful. And to watch the documentary on how they cleaned them all up, oh my God, dude. Like, have you seen those? Like, especially Frankenstein, that's the oldest one.
I have them, but the only one I've watched is Creature.
Dude, watch Frankenstein. It's so beautiful. It's just, it looks like it was made a few years ago. It doesn't, I'm glad that they, because I never, on my TV, I never have that true motion, that soap opera effect. I hate that. So I always take that off. I watch my movies as regular. But yeah, man, those movies, The Invisible Man, all of them, I have that whole collection. Cool, because I got them all with the Alex Ross artwork. But yeah, man, those are dope. And then I was going to tell you something. Oh, just real quick out there, if there are any hardcore collectors of John Carpenter films, go on eBay and swoop up the European imports of the 4K European imports of Prince of Darkness, They Live, Escape from New York, and The Fog. Because if you're into 4K and John Carpenter, those movies came out beautiful. I mean, they look, especially Escape from New York, that one looks awesome. They redid the sound, like true sound. Because, you know, and when they did the re-release of that, they added in little snippets of dialogue. Like, they put in some extra lines that Snake says off screen. This one just keeps it real with the actual sound, but it's just all done up. But yeah, man, if you, and plus I showed you those, the artwork on those cases is beautiful. Like, they have really, really good artwork on those cases. But yeah, man, check it out.
Cause I have all those, the Scream Factory ones, and I love the artwork on those. I always get mine at Comic-Con because right before they come out, and they always give me these awesome, prints that go with it. I just got a few more prints. I got Humanoids from the Deep and the Galaxy of Terror one. I just had, when you buy those movies, oh, it comes with these. Well, give them to me. I just roll them up and put them in the closet somewhere. But I really love the cover art on those imports, man. They look better than the Shout Factory or Scream Factory, whatever you want to call it. It's the same company, but I mean, they look better on those, man. I like those. But back to, I mean, we've way veered off and everything else like we always do. But back to the, well, you already answered that question. I was about to say, what made you want to do this? The Shudder horror noir. I mean, that's, you answered that question already. But when it was over, when it was all said and done and it was over with, I was thinking, man, you could do a part two to this with more people. I mean, this can be like a series of going on and on and on. Yeah. Are you considering doing another one dealing with the same topic, or you going to go on to something else?
Actually, I kind of wanted to take a left turn on horror for a minute, and I actually wanted to do one that I'll talk to you about later. Because one thing I learned about living in Los Angeles is you never say your ideas publicly. So I'm going to hit you up later on about something I'm thinking about that heavily involves you. So, but if I could do a follow-up to this, it would be cool, you know. Oh, real quick, if you go on my Instagram page, Real Talk Junkies Films, you'll see a snippet of Jim Terry that's not in the film where he talks about Phantasm. Another one of me and Nez's favorite flicks. Did you watch that clip yet? I put it up on Instagram and it's on Facebook.
Yeah, I saw it.
So he talks about, like, I have no idea what's going on. I mean, Jim, I can't say it. I mean, Jim is a good, great, funny character, man. That dude has so much pop culture and his artwork. Oh my God. If anybody knows comic book art, you're familiar with the legendary late, great Bernie Wrightson, who did the earlier Swamp Thing comics. He was one of the, actually his, Swamp Thing was one of his ideas. But Bernie Wrightson is one of the, he's my all-time favorite comic book artist. And Jim Terry, his way of drawing is just, it mirrors that. It's like Bernie Wrightson reborn. And Jim actually told me a story how he got to meet him, Bernie Wrightson. Unfortunately, I didn't get to meet him because he passed away. But his artwork, if just Bernie Wrightson, Google it. I mean, his artwork is remarkable. The dude is just, he was a legendary badass. But yeah, it's all relative. So yeah, man, just check out those clips. And I hope this film, I think it, as much as far as I know, I think this is the first of its kind, a documentary about native people in horror movies. You know, I think it's the first of its kind. I've never seen any other, because I always try to check out what's out there before I start a project, because I don't want to mimic something. I don't want to. Yeah, I definitely, one thing I pride myself on being a native filmmaker is I don't ever want my films to be referred to as a native version of. You feel me? I don't ever want them to say, oh, that's just a native version of the thing, or that's just a native version of. I don't ever want my shit to be referred to as that. I try to pick original stories and try to, you know, design them the way that are that remains original. So yeah, this one, I think I searched and I've seen a lot of other documentaries dealing with, you know, oppression or the pipeline or alcoholism, but I've never seen one just based on entertainment like this, like in this genre, with the horror genre. So I hope it's the first of its kind. And it's been submitted to film festivals. I hope they find an interest in it. I've been, God knows, man, I'm eating a lot of shit with my short films getting rejected left and right. But it's the nature of the beast, man. It's a hit or miss. So,
well, I hope everyone sees this one. Where are you going to release this on the world?
Well, here's the thing. So at the end of the film, before I did it, before I started it, actually, I was researching copyright infringement and, you know, what I could put in there, what I could show that's already copyrighted material, such as some of the pictures and the movie clips that I put in there. And I found something called the Fair Use Act in Entertainment, and that states that you can use copyrighted images of other media as long as you're not marketing it as your own. So if I give props to all the clips that I've used, which I think I'm going to have to do a thing before I release it wide, because I already stated at the end of the film, if you probably saw it, said, you know, all video and images are used under the Fair Use Act. But still, it's kind of like I have to give props to what clips they are, you know, like I did with the music, you know, props to Kevin MacLeod and Eric Margolin for the let me using their music through my projects. But I think that's one of the hardest things is getting all that in line before you release it, because I know with Amazon, before they put the smudging on there, they was asking me, is all this intellectual property yours? Are all the images and everything, the music, everything you use, is it yours? And everything with the exception of the music is mine. But they're like, okay, cool. Because, you know, like Facebook and stuff, if you try to put clips of movies on there, they'll flag some of it and be like, you can't show this because you're infringing on Warner Brothers or Universal Pictures. So you just have to, you know, and once again, what Jim Terry says, there's ways around that. So you got to do it sensibly, because I don't want to submit this, you know, for distribution and be told, well, you have too many mainstream clips in there, copywritten clips, you can't use it. Because I won't get in trouble. The distribution companies will get in trouble.
That's what I was going to ask you. I mean, with the clips and the images you're showing it, I was thinking, like, whoa, I mean, can you do this? But then after you watch the credits, I did see that. I went, oh, okay, well, that's good. I think, speaking of those scenes that are in it, I'm usually, when I watch documentaries and they show a clip from something, they usually have the the title of what it is. We already know what these images are. You don't need those. But I'm just saying some people don't know what this clip is from and what it is. And they usually have the title of the film and then I guess whoever put it out, Warner Brothers, Universal, what have you, stuff like that on there. But I'm glad that you researched that and didn't just throw anything in your film or in your documentary. So that was really cool. That, yeah, that was something that I was thinking of as I was watching it, but then I just totally slipped it. I'm glad you brought it up. But oh man, yeah, because that's that can be a pain in the ass to pay someone to use something else. And we're broke, everyone, so don't think we're big ballers. We're not yet, but I mean, yeah, man. But it's cool that you did get to put those in there, and I'm glad that you researched what you could and what you couldn't do. So, but as far as Amazon and everything, I mean, I know YouTube's also like that as well, dealing with other copyrighted stuff. I mean, there's all kinds of things on there, but I don't know how these people get around it, because they're, like I said, there's full movies on there at times, and then there's clips from or even some of the clips that you're not supposed to film the things that are on the screens at Comic-Con, but some people do, and but they have the police out there that patrol YouTubes and all these sites, video sites, and they pull those clips pretty quick. So if something comes out of Comic-Con that you know is going to be pulled, you got to see it right when it's there, or because it could be pulled within an hour, within minutes. So, but
yeah, because like right now, man, someone put up 4K quality scenes from Endgame, and I thought it was like, you know, to promote the that it's coming out. Like you can get it ahead digitally. I already ordered my Steelbook from Best Buy, but it's like, people are already putting like 4K clips up there of that, and it's good quality, you know, but it's like, damn, how are they able to do that? You know, it's, you know, but I just real quick about Comic-Con. One thing I look forward to, because I love seeing movies with a crowd, especially if it's a good movie, and like the trailer reactions that people have, like from Comic-Con, are just dope. You know, I love hearing people get all hyped up and screaming, and so yeah, that's one of the things I dig on.
Yeah, man, with those crowds, man, it's a totally different crowd depending on what's being talked about or what they're showing, man. People like lose it. The only best way I can describe of a crowd losing it is during the Twilight Saga when they brought them to Comic-Con. I mean, those little gals lost it. I mean, I've talked about it on East Society where I couldn't even hear what they were talking about on the stage, and they have microphones and there's huge loudspeakers in there, but these little screaming chicks are screaming so loud. I mean, can you calm down so I can hear what he's saying? I mean, that's how it is. And this past weekend with the Kevin Feige and Marvel Studios. I mean, if you guys go and watch, if you weren't in there, or you can watch the whole panel on YouTube, all the clips are not in it. But man, I was watching it on a big screen in another room, and I was flipping out. But I couldn't imagine being in that room, hooting and hollering. And I have been in there for big announcements. I was in there for the first Walking Dead panel. It wasn't in Hall H, it was in a smaller room. Or I was in there for when Lost was big, or when they first Iron Man, that was the first film in the MCU, and being in that panel, we lost it. And because I mean, I was never really an Iron Man fan, but when John Favreau go, okay, well, here's a little bit from Iron Man that no one's seen yet, and those few minutes of it, man, we lost our mind. Like, oh my God, this is gonna be amazing. Yeah, man. I mean, Comic-Con's it's a different breed of fan. Some people, oh, it's just for a bunch of nerds. I mean, all right, if that's what you think, then I'm proud to be a nerd, because I fanboy out and nerd out to all that stuff, man. And it's amazing. If you have not been to Comic-Con, put that on your bucket list. I mean, it's definitely something that, you need to go to, man. That'd be awesome if you got to show something.
I'm not going to go until I'm a guest. Because one thing, I can't afford it.
And I mean, dude, I mean, even when 2 years ago when we did the Indigenous Comic Con in Albuquerque, you had a booth, you had a panel, did a screening. Dude, that was awesome. Yeah, it was in a little room, but I mean, it's cool, man. I mean, other than to sit there and watch people watch your film, I don't know how many times we had seen it by then, but that was awesome. And I can't wait for people to see this, to see your documentary. I mean, if we get to see it on a big screen, awesome. Or maybe we'll get to show it again. Speaking of Indigenous, didn't you say you're going down there again?
Yeah, they contacted me the other day and asked me if I would be interested in showing, doing the same thing, showing a film, having a panel, and having a booth. So we'll see, you know, because the director. Or the media person that does all that, they run on a skeleton crew, so they're always busy. Especially with this weekend, they're at Denver. They're at Denver this weekend, and then they're doing the one. But the one next year in New Zealand, that's the one that, man, if I can get to that one, that'll be awesome. But yeah, man, props to Lee Francis. For putting it all together, Indigenous Comic Con, and also if you're in Albuquerque, what's the name of his comic book shop?
Oh, geez, I don't know. I mean, I can't remember.
Yeah, but it there's a comic book shop. It's an Indigenous owned by Lee Francis, who same tribe as I am, Laguna Pueblo. But yeah, man, if you get down there, check it out. But Indigenous Comic Con's coming in November. We'll be talking more about that, and hopefully. We'll be doing a show from there too, and see which people show up. But yeah, dude, it's a good experience to be a filmmaker, to be a native filmmaker, because we're few and far between. I mean, there's some native filmmakers that only have one focus, and that's, you know, whether they're a documentarian or they want to talk about things from the past, but you very rarely meet ones that deal in horror, because a lot of our people are superstitious. You know, there's some things that aren't supposed to be talked about, and they stick to that. I'm kind of, you know, once in a while I tend to kick the hornet's nest, but you know, I do what I do. And one of the things that we talked about with Cinema Red is like, if we can't tell these stories, Then who's going to do it? We still going to let white people do it? We still going to let another race of people do it, you know, that don't understand the culture? So we're the ones that are going to have to do it. And sometimes you just gotta, you know, ante up and kick in and push forward and do what you feel is right in your heart. And I feel that, you know, not only are horror movies fun, but, you know, being a native and having all this knowledge of scary things and showing it to a wider audience, that's awesome. You know, it's going to open up a whole new genre of horror, I think, and people are going to look at native horror as like, wow, you know, this is a new horizon. This is something new, and it's from here. It's from this land.
Yep. And with that, everyone, I think we're going to wrap this things up, but definitely check this out when it's out there. Well, I'll come on here and let you guys know when it's out there, or check Instagram and all that. I always post everything dealing with Mike here with his film project. So I cannot wait for everyone else to see it. And I would love to see this in a crowd again, or see it with other people than just me sitting there. But dude, right on, man. You did it again for the fourth time. I mean, I've seen everything Mike has made, and I'm always hyped. Dude, this is what I'm doing next. I'm like, all right, cool. And then, hey, this is what I did so far. He'll send me something, and I'm like, fuck, dude. finish this first before you start something else. But it's cool, man. I mean, dude, you know, I'm always here for you for anything, to promote whatever you're a part of this show. I mean, everything dealing with me is yours. So you always have that platform to get out there. And everyone that's listening around the world, thank you so much. And also, everyone around the world that's checked out The Smudging, that's streaming on Amazon Prime. And if you haven't seen it, man, come on, get with it. Get on there and see it. So, man, yeah, dude, I just, like I said, I can't wait for everyone to see this. And I said these exact same words when The Smudging. Can't wait for everyone to see it. Now everyone's seen it. Well, not everyone, but 500,000 of you have seen it.
500,000 people seen it.
Yeah, of you have seen it. So we need 500,000 more. But before we get out of here, dude, is there anything else you want to talk about?
I just want to say, oh, my God, just wanted to say thank you. Very huge thank you to Mr. Rutger Hauer, who passed away today at the age of 75. Fucking Rutger Hauer was the shit. Stole the scenes in every movie he's done, from Blade Runner to Buffy to The Hitcher. I mean, Rutger Hauer, man, that dude was badass, and he's going to be missed. You know, he was something else. I still want them to – nobody's going to – we need to talk to Shout Factory, man, to get him to release Wanted Dead or Alive. Somebody's got to release that.
Yeah, or at least give us a is there a Blu-ray of Hitcher? I want to say I have it. Or am I thinking something else? Okay, I know I'd have a DVD.
No, I was asking Shout when I hit him up once in a while on Facebook. I'm like, dude, two movies, man, you got to do The Hitcher and do Pow Wow Highway. So, yeah, and then in Wanted Dead or Alive, we need that one. And Split Second, they need to put that on Blu-ray. I like that one. Did you ever see that one where he's in London in the future? It's all flooded and there's that monster that looks like Venom.
Yeah.
I like that movie.
It says there's a import Region B Blu-ray, but I don't know. Nowadays, anyone can make something into a Blu-ray, so I don't think this is a legit one, because the only things I see are the DVDs that we have, and that crappy remake. Did you see that?
Of The Hitcher? Yeah. Nah.
Oh, garbage.
One Blu-ray company overseas that I keep an eye on for good quality is Umbrella.
Yeah.
Umbrella comes out with, like, Twilight Time comes out with them, but Umbrella comes out with them in seemingly better quality and way cheaper.
Oh, yeah, because I got the Savini's Night of the Living Dead. I got the 88 Blob and...
Fright Night? Did you get Fright Night?
Yeah, I got that and... Orca. I got that one from them.
Orca.
I love Orca, man. I don't care what anyone says. That movie's
that
awesome.
Movie's cool.
That's another thing. Listen to the Native Americans when they're trying to warn you. And Man Called Horse didn't listen. Maybe he thought he knew better because he had some Native blood in him. But he didn't listen. That's why he's dead.
Man Called Horse.
That's why that orca got him. And now, spoiler alert if you haven't seen it. But I mean, but that was true, man. I mean, Will Sampson's character was trying to warn him, and he didn't listen. Listen to the natives, everybody. For those of you out there, listen to us, damn it. When we try to tell you, hey, man, don't do this, that's bad shit's going to happen, and then you end up dead, you know, because you didn't listen to me. But yeah, dude, really quick, special shout out to Jim Terry, man. Awesome dude, if you're listening to this. I thought he was just awesome in it, and I loved how, like, he said he talked about old theaters and everything, and the way he ended this documentary was awesome, dude. I clapped. I mean, I gave it an applause. Just, I mean,
oh, nice.
I would have done that anyway, maybe after all your films I've seen, but what he said at the very end. I'm not going to tell you what he said. I'm going to wait until you guys see it. But yeah, Jim Terry, man, you rock. If you guys want to follow Jim Terry, he is on Instagram. And this gentleman is an amazing artist. He does artwork every single day. He had told me, if you guys listen to his interview, he goes, I asked him, how do you stay, not stay in shape, but how do you keep your skills tight? He goes, I do at least one drawing every single day.
His napkin art.
Yeah.
The stuff he draws on napkins in coffee shops is like freaking masterpiece.
Yeah, man, you could frame that and put it on the wall. If you want to follow Jim Terry, it's Jim.Terry Terry.73, or just type in Jim Terry and just look at all his amazing artwork that's on there. He's done so much. He's going to be in Denver this weekend at Indigenous Pop X. I wish I could go, but not right after Comic-Con. Come on. I mean, I'm broke. shout out to Reclaim Designs. They're also going to be there. I mean, I hype them up all the time. All my pictures you see me at Comic-Cons wearing Native Star Wars shirts because of a Reclaim Design. Check them out as well. Reclaim Designs on Instagram, Facebook, all that. Order some t-shirts, jewelry, prints, and everything they got there. But oh man, right on, dude. Man, thank you so much for coming on. Like I always say, you're always welcome to come on here and talk about whatever. Dude, I think next thing we're gonna talk about, we should do a commentary for The Hitcher, because
oh yeah,
that is something that Mike and I went and seen. We were talking about it earlier. I watched it earlier today, but I've seen it a million times. I can definitely watch it a million and one more. But, dude, like I said when we were texting and we were talking about, what did we see The Hitcher with? Because we saw it in Alameda at the South Shore Cinema, which is not there anymore. And I could not remember what we saw it with, much less. And I knew somebody else was there with us, and I couldn't remember that. And you told me it was your cousin Jim, and we saw it with that horror comedy House. If you guys haven't seen that, I love that one. With
that movie's a classic.
greatest American Hero. He's in
and
it.
Norm and Norm
and Bull from Night Court.
Yep.
Oh man, yeah, dude. If you guys have not seen The Hitcher, and the only place I know that it's streaming, it's on Facebook. If you're a part of the Facebook stuff, just type in The Hitcher in the videos, and the full movie is on there, because that's how I watched it today. But I have the DVD, but I'd have to dig it out. So, but yeah, dude, yeah, definitely come on, dude. And we'll, I don't know if we can have the sound. I don't want someone coming after us, but we can just, watch it and just BS about it as we're going along. So, dude, again, thank you so much for coming on, and everyone do get out to, check out, Mike's documentary and, watch, The Smudging on Amazon Prime. Cinema Red, Natives and Horror. This is Real Talk Junkies Films. And what's the other thing? Support independent native film.
Yep.
Yeah. So everyone, yeah, get on that. And follow us all on Instagram. What are your Instagram pages?
I have three of them. So the main one is Real Talk Junkies Films. That's all one word. Real Talk Junkies Films. And then I have Red Gear, REDGEAR, Red Gear 96 is my clothing page. And then my action figures page is The Boneyard Collectibles. So go on there and check out my latest stuff. I just got a Sideshow Silver Screen Edition Frankenstein figure today that I just got done photographing and putting the pictures up. So check it out, man.
I gotta get the new, the last two Jason figures, was it 2009? Was that one came out?
The Freddy versus Jason one?
No, the Friday the 13th one.
The remake?
Yeah, reimagining, whatever you want to call it. I need to get that one, and I just saw the Freddy versus Jason one at Comic-Con. I was gonna buy it, man, because that guy, cash only. I was like, man, come on, get with the times, bro. Get one of those little squares, and I would have had it, but. That was the only reason I didn't get it. I said, man, I'm not walking way over to the bank to get cash, man. I mean, but that's my fault. I should have carried cash. But it's out there now, and usually when you can find these NECA figures is at Target. So when I get paid, I'm going to go over there and swoop up both of those. So, but all right, man. That's going to be it, everybody. Thank you for listening. This was episode 114. Do go back and check out everything else that I've done with MacNez, and you guys already know everything on Eat Society. We have a ESP at the movies. We still need to do Spider-Man. Yes, it's been out for a few weeks. We're definitely doing that. We need to do a full show, a regular episode, and we're going to be talking about the new live version of Lion King. Yeah. And everything else that we talk about on there as well. And do check out all our Anchor stuff, E-Society on Anchor. That's also on Apple Podcasts and a bunch of other ones. And again, we are on Stitcher. The Skater Pod, the Skater Nez Podcast Network is on Stitcher now. Just search Skater Nez. It's SK8ER. And then Nez, and then you'll find everything else on there. So do check those out. I did put two bonus episodes for dealing with E-Society. I did my wrap-up for preview night and my wrap-up for day one at Comic-Con. I didn't do my wrap-up for day two. I'm going to do that once we just do the regular E-Society because I was just too partied out, too tired to do it. But everyone that's listening to those, you can check those out also on the regular Skater Nez Podcast Network or go over to Anchor and listen to everything on there. We got tons of stuff. I also made a little special guest appearance on the latest The Horror Returns. Talked a little bit about Comic-Con. And do check out my brothers, The Horror Returns. Those guys are awesome. So, but all right, man. We're going to get out of here. But any last words?
Everybody just be safe out there and take care of each other. And if you're in high heat, stay hydrated. So, yeah, man. Thanks cool. Thanks for listening and supporting my brother Mac Nez and my brother's The Horror Returns podcast. And yeah, man, shout out to everybody out there that's just doing right, living right, helping each other out, not taking any shit, and then putting your work in.
Yep. And shout out to GP Polson and John Yaya.
Yep. you guys are the best guys in the crew. Yoshipato, man, you guys rock. Hell yeah.
Yeah. So with that, everyone, hey, take care. Party on, be excellent to each other, and always rock hard and skate fast.